Hey everybody, Jimmy Warren, welcome to a brand new episode of Guitar Talk. Now, you may have noticed that over the past couple of months, from about June until now, I haven't done any intros or outros on my show. I've just had the show, just the interview. The reason is that the set that you see behind me is actually a part of my studio, and this home is sold. It's not here no more. So this is being done in advance. I'm spending a couple of months just visiting friends, doing some traveling, and a handful of gigs. And I leave to move to Asia on the 28th of August, which is just a few days from the airing of this episode. So this episode is kind of special to me because during the process of trying to discover where I would like to end up, the Philippines actually became an option for me. I know some people there, and somebody said, "Hey, have you ever heard of R.J. Jacinto?" And I'm like, "No, I haven't." And then come to find out, you know, he's the guy in the Philippines. He's the guitarist. He's the man over there, and he's got a long history. And he owns his own line of guitars and amps. He owns several music stores, guitar shops. He owns clubs, radio station, TV station, recording studio. And he's got it all. And so I said, I gotta learn more about this guy. And as I dove into RJ's history, I was just really, really impressed. And then when I got the opportunity to sit down with him and talk with him, I just discovered that this man is somebody that somebody like me needs to know. You know, he's really impressive, smart guy, good businessman, it seems, and a very talented musician. And so I'm honored, you know, to have the opportunity to share this conversation that I had with RJ with you, in just knowing that in a couple of days I'll be in the Philippines and hopefully, you know, having the opportunity to maybe share a meal and talk some more shop with the guy and eventually, you know, stand on stage together. But you're going to enjoy this, you know, you're going to enjoy this conversation. And do know that, you know, a couple of days after this, I will be out of the country. But Guitar Talk goes on, man. It's too big to stop. It's rolling downhill, man, like a snowball. It's crazy. So do yourself a favor. Sit down, put your feet up, get a nice cool beverage, and enjoy this conversation with a very impressive artist and musician and businessman in the music industry, RJ Jacinto, right here on Guitar Talk. How are you?
Hi, Jimmy. How are you?
Real good. Real good. It's absolute pleasure to meet you.
Likewise, likewise. Okay.
I love the array of guitars behind you there.
There's one there that says 70. 70. They gave it to me. The factory gave it to me on my 70th birthday.
I'll be darned. Well, congratulations.
And that was 8 years ago. I'm turning 78 on June 3rd.
Wow. Wow. Well, I know I won't talk to you before then, so happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. You know what? I'm moving to the Philippines.
Great.
In September. I mean, in August. And somebody, because I've interviewed all the greatest players from around the world. I mean, you name it. They've all been on my show, from Jack Bruce to Steve Vai to, I mean, you name it.
Thanks for the privilege.
Well, when I found out about you, somebody that lives over there that I know says, "Well, do you know about RJ?" And I'm like, "No, I don't." And when he started sharing your information, I was like, "How did I not know about this guy?" You know, I mean, your history, your lineage, your businesses, everything is extremely professional. I mean, extremely impressive. So, if you don't mind, I want to find out, you know, how you went down this rabbit hole of the guitar, because, you know, you're the guy in your country. Everybody talks about you. Everybody knows who you are. And so I'm kind of curious, how that guy got his start, because I don't know.
Okay. You know, I grew up in a family that was all business, banking and steel, you know. And I was all set to go to the family business after college. And I was and I graduated when I was 19, college, okay. But when I was in high school, fourth year high school, that was 1960, I was 15 years old, I formed a class band at the Ateneo, or the Loyola University here, Jesuit school. Okay, so it was a Christmas program, December 5, 1960. And I got together a bunch of classmates and we performed. And you, boy, if you saw the instruments we were using, we had a gasoline drum, the flat, like a kerosene drum, with one gut here and a stick there, and that was our bass.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had a Taisko, T-E-I-S-O. Have you heard of that guitar, Taisko guitar?
I got a couple.
Yeah, from Japan. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I had. So we played in the Christmas program, and we became a hit in school. And we built a following with the Ateneo High School, the Loyola High School, okay? And then a DJ named Mr. Blue Jeans had a very popular radio program at 6 a.m. or something. 6 a.m. where all the students were listening because they were getting dressed for school. And he saw me perform in the studio of the radio station, and he liked it, and he recorded us, and then started playing our instrumental tunes. We were doing instrumentals at that time. My influence was Johnny and the Hurricanes, Duane Eddy, and of course Scotty Moore and James Burton and all those guys.
Right, right.
And then the Ventures. Okay. So we became a big hit just because of that, and then we had a TV show, and it rated 60% of the country watched it. You know, that was when I was 16 years old, 17 years old. So then I recorded, and then I put up when I was so we at those at that time it's mostly singles. You know the 45 RPM releases.
Right.
So we had two albums at that time, from 1961 to 64 or 65, somewhere there. We had two albums and about 33 singles. Okay.
Wow.
But I had to work in the family business. So I sort of stopped playing for a while. But anyway, to make a long story short, I set up a radio station in the backyard of my parents' home. I was third year of college. I was 17, I think, or 18, yeah. So we set up a radio station there, and we started playing all the releases from the U.S. almost immediately. I would talk to my friends in the airlines, you know, the stewardesses, the pursers, buy me this record in the States, because it took about 6 months to get here, 1 year.
Wow.
So we started this like a school project radio station. We called it the first teenage station serving the teenage nation. But our signal only reached up to maybe so many blocks for. But that got things started for me, and even when I had to, when I was 19, I had to work for the family. So I let my classmates run the radio station, and that carried my name, I guess. And even when I went into exile, it still carried my name, because the military took over my radio station. And I was gone for 14 and a half years. And I got back 1986 here. I left 1972. So in 1986, after 14 and a half years, I got back here. And they returned the radio station to me, and I started this Bistro RJ. I just wanted to play for a few friends. So I rented the place and I started playing Beach Boys again and Beatles and everything. And I started, playing 60s in the radio station, Beatles. Because we introduced the Beatles here in the Philippines. Beatles, Beach Boys, Eric Clapton. So we broke a lot of new records here over the air. That's why we sort of generated a cult following, you know?
Yeah.
And that carried me through up to now, I guess. I'm on my 37th year playing in my own bistro. When I started, when I was younger, it was three times a week, and then it became twice. Now I play once a week, every Friday, and they dance to the music up to now. That's the summary.
But as a guitar player, I'm kind of curious, you know, over the years, what are some of the things that you did that have helped make you, you know, the player that you are right now? Because, of course, we grow, you know, if we spend time and we really dive into it, you know, at the end of the rainbow, you know, we're usually a lot better than we were in the beginning. So what did you do that made you a solid player today?
Well, I think I started concentrating on the tempo first.
Yeah.
Because my father was a piano player also, you know. He was, as a hobby, he was a good piano player. And when he heard my early records, when he heard me play, hey, you're going too fast here or too slow here. So I started with that. So I started singing Jimmy Rogers songs. Soldier, soldier, will you marry me with your musket, fife, and drums? Jimmy Rogers, folk singing. Right.
Yeah.
So I guess that solid rhythm got built into me.
Yeah.
In the recording studio, I had to be perfectly timed in my recording. So that was the basis. And then for the lead guitar, I started. I like clean tones. I'm a tone guy.
Yeah.
Not a text guy.
All right.
Not the best guy. So I always told my band members, look, that's too trebly, that's too bassy. You know, you have to learn band sense as opposed to common sense.
Yeah.
Similar to common sense. A lot of people just play and play. They don't have band sense. You find your place in the band. And don't overplay. Don't overplay. And don't underplay, okay? That's called band sense.
Right.
So the dynamics of the band. So I was very tone conscious and also groove conscious. The groove has to be established. So if you have a bad drummer, even if it's a good band, you sound bad. If you have a good drummer, the band's not so good. You still sound a little passable, you know? So that's what happened. So and then I started learning Johnny and the Hurricanes licks. Mm-hmm. That guitarist there, I don't know his name, but he was amazing. You know, he played Red River Rock, Reveille Rock, with a saxophone in between. At that time, the instrumentals always had a saxophone, like Duane Eddy.
Yeah,
you know? I started learning his Detour, his Ramrod, those pieces, and then the Ventures came. And the Shadows came, and I started learning that. And then I never really. I took a few lessons, but I just could not adapt myself to reading notes. So I don't read notes at all.
Right.
It's all a tone and melody, because we sort of forget the melody. Mm-hmm. When the effects came in, at that time we had no excuse. Just one little imperfection, you could hear it because we didn't have this distortion that could lengthen this, that could, you know, sustain the sound and all that. So it's very percussive. It was very percussive. I guess that contributed a lot to what I do today, because I make people dance and I have to transmit the energy. So it's got to be punchy, you know?
Right. Right. Well, you said some things that are really, really key. And I think a lot of players miss out on the fact, because you talk about playing in time, and there's so many guys that can't go into the studio and be in time. They can't play to a click track. They can't play to a metronome. And those are things that people should, you know, learn to do. And I mean, I know guys like Satriani and people like that still to this day, when they practice in that, they'll practice to a metronome or to a click track.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they got to be, you got to be on.
It's got to be built in, I think.
Yeah. And then the other thing that you mentioned was melody, you know, playing for the song as opposed to just, look, there's a difference between playing guitar and playing music, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yes. And you know, they don't know tone anymore. So just, I'm not saying they don't, it's not the priority for them.
Right.
It's not the priority. But to me, it's so important. Like I've been playing for, you know, so many years. And I said, why do I have to switch guitars?
Right.
When I'm singing Beatles, Trini Lopez, because I do a lot of covers, you know, in my own way, why do I have to change guitars? So, I discovered, you know, Gibson has a darker sound and Fender has a younger, trebly sound, brighter sound, punchier sound because of that tight sound of the single coil. So right. I said, why don't I open up a Fender Jazzmaster, a Gibson ES-335, Les Paul, a Fender Strat, and study the pickups, you know? And yeah. I did that. As a matter of fact, I bought a small guitar shop when I arrived from exile in 1980. I arrived in 1986. In 1988, there was this guy here named Rudy Discipolo, and he had a small shop, but he knew tone. As a matter of fact, he called this shop Rogue Tone. His name was Rudy. So he showed me this is the wiring, this is the magnet wire, 40, 44, 45, 42, and all that. So I said, okay, what's the Fender? What's the measurement? How many ohms? You know, 6 ohms, how many windings? Yeah. So I studied all that. Said, can you put all these pickups of these guitars in one guitar? So I don't have to change guitars. So through the years, I've been, that was 1990 or something, 91, I started experimenting. So I came up with this super vintage guitar. Mm-hmm. And it's very simple, really. Can I show you one?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, now. This is made from mango.
Right. Okay.
We had a part in partnership with the Bacchus guys in Japan and Divisor. Mm-hmm. We set up a factory here in the Philippines, and they discovered that mango is like koa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that sounds like. And we just throw the mango trees here when there are storms. We just throw the mango wood. Anyway, this is. Let me get back to the sound, the tone, okay? Now, for me, and that's just my opinion, I'm going to tilt this a little bit. This is, what I did was to put an off switch. See, this is a three-way switch here. When you push it down, it's humbucking, it's off, and then it's single coil.
Oh, okay.
Now this one, since this is single coil, it's just on and off, okay? Now here, three-way switch again. So the middle is off, this one is humbucking, and then this one is single coil when you flip it up. So this way I can do even a mixture of Gibson and Fender sounds.
Yeah.
And of course, maybe not 100% exact, but maybe 80 to 85%, it sounds like it.
Right. Okay.
So I will now switch. I will now turn on the single coil here first. Okay. Mm-hmm. No, that's a. That's really like a Italian strat.
Okay. Right.
So when I push it down, it becomes humbucking, and I adjust the tone just a little bit here. It becomes. Becomes ES-335 or less.
Like a 35, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
And then, so same thing here with the neck. So I go here, the single coil. single chord in the humbucking. So you have like a ES-335 or whatever.
Right.
So you have this strap. So I activate this too. Yeah. It becomes. So this is like a dire straits.
Right.
So I can turn this off and I can just activate this too. Okay, so. It's mellower, it still sounds like a strat. And I'm doing a lousy job here. Now, this does something that the strat doesn't do. I can activate all.
Right.
At the same time. All single coils. So anyway, okay. Now, wow. I can mix a tele and a humbucker here. And then a humbucking. So it gives you about 21 sounds. So I didn't have to change guitars. Now, yeah. We showed this in the NAMM show, and it got written up in a British magazine. Jeff Baxter tried this, and Don Wilson, and then I jammed with them in the, what hotel was that? Marriott Hotel, that was attached to the convention center.
Right.
And I think that was the last public appearance of Don Wilson, I think. If I'm not mistaken, one of the last public appearances. So I was able to show that guitar in the NAMM show.
Wow.
So that's the story of my tone journey.
That's really cool. I like that a lot, simply because I think we think a lot the same, because I have guitars that have been designed that have those options. Like, for instance, I have a guitar that has two humbuckers, but the humbuckers that are in it are called Zex coils. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but it comes with a three-way toggle where it really goes between a single coil, a PAF, and a P90.
Oh, I see.
And then the center pick. Yeah. And then the center pickup here. I'm going to show it to you. Okay.
Yeah, show you.
Since we're, you know, kind of geeking out here a little bit on guitars. This right here.
Yeah. Wow. So that's a P90.
Both of these can be single coils, P90s or PAFs.
So you can fit the P90s into a single coil?
Yep, it can be a single coil, a P90, or a PAF. Or
similar,
a humbucker.
Very similar, yeah.
And then the center pickup is a Nashville Tele.
Okay.
Yeah. So the almost the same principle is what you're talking
about. Same principle, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't think of this thing. Of course, it was not easy.
Yeah.
Because we use a ceramic pickup here. We use an Alnico 5 here. And they bleed within each other. So it's not exactly an exact science that you wind this like this, you wind this like that. It's your ear. Mm-hmm. So I kept on winding 6.2, 6.5, 7, 7.5. When you wind it too much, it becomes the mid is boosted.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to all these guitars in the 80s and 90s, the Kramers and all that. They built guitars to boost the effects.
Right.
So the tone was gone.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
There's only so much that you can wind and then you lose that nice tone, you know.
The thing that's unique about these in that, I'm going to have to get you a set of these when I come over. What's unique about these is like what you're talking about. When you wind the pickup, you're winding the pickup, correct?
Yeah.
This is got six different poles, so it's wound for each individual
string. For each individual pole.
Yeah.
Is that your Winey or that's a Gibson?
No. This is a guy in Massachusetts or Delaware. His name's Scott Lawing. He's a friend of mine. He endorses me. So these are called Zex coils. It's called a tri-bucker because it's got the toggle switch.
So each pole is wound?
Each pole.
Separately. Yep. Not the whole.
Right.
Wow. First time I hear about that. Thank you.
And it's extremely quiet.
Yeah.
And a single coil sounds just like a single coil, and a P90 sounds like a P90, and the PAF sounds like a PAF. It's really unique. You know, I found out, are you familiar with Fuchs amps?
No, I'm not.
No, Andy Fuchs, he's in New York. Fuchs amps is like it's like a dumbbell.
Okay. How do you spell it?
F-U-C-H-S.
Okay, good.
Anyway, and Andy was the one that turned me on to these pickups because he had them in all his. And once I started playing them, I was like, oh my God. I mean, they're amazing. They're amazing. I'm gonna get you a set. Okay. When I get over there, I'll get you a
set. Yeah. Thanks. So we think the same then.
We do.
The tone got lost somewhere in the horizon with all these effects.
Yeah. I like clean. I like effects, you know, I love guitar players like Andy Timmons, you know, guys like that. I mean, I'm heavy into that. But when I saw your guitar, there was another thing that I really liked about the guitar you just showed me. And that was the fact that you have the jack.
Correct.
Like that.
You know why? Because you put it under your strap anyways. I said, why didn't they think of this?
Yeah.
So I just reversed it. It's more practical than I have to do this.
Right. You know, Ibanez is doing that now.
Oh, really? Well, I did this, I don't know, 30 years ago.
You were the inventor of it. You need to go back and say, hey, you owe me something.
Did you know that I, years ago in the 1990s, I guess 1996, I made a thin acoustic guitar that was shaped like a Strat, mm-hmm. and I called it Strat Acoustic.
Oh yeah.
And then a Tele-acoustic, okay?
Yeah.
And 3 or 4 years after, I thought Fender was going to get mad at me. They came out with Tele-acoustic and Strat Acoustic.
I remember that. That's crazy. Crazy. See, they probably saw yours and went, hey, why not? You know?
Why not?
Yeah, it's great. But you know what? I absolutely love the Telecaster. I think, you know, although probably like you, I probably don't have as many guitars as you because I've probably only got like 60 or 70. But I'm a huge, the Tele to me is like, I don't know. There's something about a Telecaster that is just a perfect instrument. It's like the desert island guitar. If you could only have one guitar.
Yeah, correct.
That would be the one to have.
You know why? What I liked about it before was that, of course, now that I'm older, maybe I don't like it that much anymore. There was a little space between you and because the Strat was lying down on your body, you know?
Right.
You know? The Tele made you feel like a man. And I had a thin line Telecaster during my exile that I bought in San Francisco Guitar Center, a 1971 thin line. And I still love it, you know.
Yeah. So did you spend that time, that exile time, did you spend that time in the States? Is that where you stayed?
Mostly in the States, partly in Europe. Yeah.
Did you continue to play and make music during that time?
Not so much, but I did some recordings in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I still remember the studio, John Altman. And I did some recordings there. I think two songs, which I sent to the Philippines. And surprisingly, it became a hit and I was not here. It was a turntable hit, what they called it. They couldn't buy it, you know.
Yeah.
Because people thought that, you know, the what was going on there was that And they will not allow, because my radio stations were run by the military.
Yeah.
But they keep it under my name, you know. And they will not allow RJ's records here. So I sent it to a rival radio station. And they played it and it became a hit. So when I came back, I released it. And it became my biggest hit.
Wow.
And but I would jam sometimes with some people there. But I had a 4-track TIAC recorder where I would write songs on it. You know, the reel to reel.
Right.
Tascam.
Oh yeah. Oh, you know, 2-inch tape was the thing. It's still some of the best sounding music. You know, is that 2-inch tape, two and a half or whatever it was? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why they stopped. Everything went digital, and although that's comfortable, it just doesn't sound the same.
It's very, you're right. You know, there's no bandwidth.
Yeah.
There's no space.
Yeah.
Before you had to know where to place the microphone, how distantly, what position, what distance from the amp and the acoustic guitar. So there was really a natural space. Up to now, when I listen to my reel-to-reel tape recordings, it was just like a semi-professional home device, the Tascam. But it sounded good.
Yeah.
It's so natural, the cymbals, everything. But of course, can you imagine yourself cutting the tape and editing it and taping it back? Nowadays, we used to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Editing block, yeah. You get a blade.
Yeah,
that's how you edit it, and then you put it together again. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
So digital is very practical, but you sacrifice something. You know.
Right, right. So one thing that I find interesting about you, RJ, is the fact that, you know, I know you said you come from a family that was business centered, you know, where it was about business. But don't you feel that that's one of the aspects that so many musicians miss out on? You know, there's a lot of people that can play, but they don't know how to make their music a business. Because once you become a band or you start to tour or do those kind of make records, and that it becomes more than just you playing in your house or whatever, it becomes a business. And people aren't minded like that, I don't think. Or is it different where you are? Because here, it's like I get hired as a consultant all the time by bands because, you know, I've been, you know, doing this since the late 80s myself. Not as long as you, of course, but for a while. And I find so many people just don't understand the business of being in music.
You're right. You're right. Because they're artists. Hmm. They're artists. And I guess you can count with your fingers those that really know how to do business, like Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Chuck Berry would just put his boosters there, give me the money and I'll play.
Right.
Yeah. You're right. You know, they have to learn I think there was a book before about the recording industry called this Business of Music or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they can read books on it, you know, and try to learn it, because a lot of sometimes, you know, you really get taken advantage of by the producers and by the record companies.
Yeah. And so right now, I noticed that you had quite a few, you know, releases over the years and that. Do you have your own label? Do you release them under your own name, or are you on a label over there?
I was with Warner Philippines for a while also.
Okay.
Now, how do you really release now? I can still sell some CDs, but the others cannot anymore, because here they still have some CD players in the Philippines, you know? No. So how do you release now? By Spotify, YouTube? Yeah.
Right.
I have my own label now. Because I realized afterward, Warner was the one who told me, you know, you don't need us anymore. You have your own family. You just do it on your own, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's much better. I mean, you got control of everything that you're doing. Yeah. You know, you don't have to, you know, nobody can, you know, shut you down or cancel you or do any of those kinds of things, right?
Right. And nobody can dictate on your artistic preferences.
Right. Yeah. You know, because there's, you know, I've heard so many war stories, you know, yeah, over the years, because I've played with a lot of people, and the war stories of being taken advantage of by, you know, agents and managers and record labels and things of that nature. And when it came to the point to where you could manage yourself and your own career, I mean, I think that was a good thing. But at the same time, wouldn't you say that the music industry is kind of saturated? I mean, anybody with a laptop can make an album and put it on Spotify, which makes it more difficult for the people that are really trying to earn a living.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. That's the world now. You can't change it. You know, before it was the complete opposite. They would manufacture bands.
Yeah. Right.
Big recording companies would manufacture the bands.
Right.
Until Motown came along and did it on their own in a small house in Detroit.
Yeah.
So the independent labels. But, you know, business, that's why I still play music. You know, I have to have a balance in my life, because business is really a dog-eat-dog world, you know.
Yeah.
So what I find is the only disadvantage of managing yourself is sometimes when I'm playing my bistro, okay, I'm doing, let's say, you ain't nothing but a hound dog and all that, whatever. So I say, waiter. I start managing the restaurant, the bistro. Waiter, he's calling you. So your mind, it yeah, could bother your musical capacity, you know, because you're also thinking of the business. But you have to understand, I think, the basics. If you're forming a band and you're gathering a following, you have to understand the basics of the music industry so you don't get cheated. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So do you you know, do you tour outside of the Philippines at all? Do you, you know?
Well, I've only been to the States once in 1991, and I have a big entourage, and it's not easy for the Filipino producers there to bring me there.
Right.
And I've been busy also here. And I performed at the Trump Plaza in Atlantic City in 1991. They had to get rid of all the chairs because it was so filled up with people dancing and they didn't have to sit down. I performed in Atlantic City, Boston, Los Angeles, and Washington. Yeah. But anyway, Maryland. I've been to Australia. I've been to Australia, but not really a world tour, which I'm planning now when I'm about to turn 80.
Wow. I think that's amazing. Well, you don't look like you're 78. You sure don't act like you're 78 in the sense that you come across young. Let's just put it that way. You do.
Look at Eric Clapton. He's still touring. Look at Paul McCartney. He's still enthusiastic, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's the attitude. You do not lose your childlike enthusiasm, yeah, your teenage enthusiasm for music. I think that's the best advice I can give. Yeah. You know, music is a gift and a blessing, and you always have to look at it as with innocent eyes.
You know? Would you say you're just as passionate today about playing guitar as you were, you know, 40, 50, you know, years ago, 30 years ago?
Because of my other businesses, I don't really spend that much time on my guitar. So I have a guitar right next to my bed. If I do, I'll play for 5 minutes and then I have a whole slew of guitars in my bedroom. So I'm going to try this and go to that. I'm still passionate, but the point is there's no time.
Yeah.
And your area of concentration is very important, you know. Yeah. You can't concentrate on too many things and do it that well. So that's the answer. I'm still very passionate. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this.
Right.
But what I found is it's, you know, you make people happy. I once ran for the Senate with General Ramos here in 1992. Oh, yeah. They asked me to run with him. So I said, what's this? Political rally we have to pay them and bus them in for them to listen to us. I'd rather be a musician. They pay to see me.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's crazy. That's funny. That's really so with because I noticed that you have so many different, you know, hats that you wear. I mean, so many different businesses. You know, I noticed you got, you know, you got guitar school, guitar shops, you've got your venue, you've got a radio station, a TV station, and all that kind of stuff. So what would you say is your primary focus out of all of that? I mean, are you just the guy at the top just saying, let everybody come to me, and then I just, you know, say whatever? Or is there one aspect of it that you're more passionate about and really devoted to the most?
I think it's the guitar business. We have 10 shops that are doing really well, and we've built up our brand here. And we also distribute exclusively here, Taylor guitars.
Yeah.
And Spark amps now.
Oh, yep.
Grid. And that's what I really want to do. My slogan or my vision is to put a good playable guitar that the ordinary Filipino can afford, because it really changes your life.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And when I got inspired, without my guitar, probably I'd be dead by now with all the stress. Hopelessness.
So what would be considered, because I don't know, what would be considered an affordable guitar in the Philippines? I mean, what kind of price point would we be talking about?
Do you know that we sell a Les Paul? Yeah. We sell a guitar for what, $25? $20?
Really?
And it's playable. Electric guitar with one single coil.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We have it made, you know, here in the Philippines. We were taught by the Spaniards a long time ago. We were under the Spanish. So there's a group of people who still do it. It was they did it a lot in the province of Cebu, and now here there's a province just outside of Manila. It's called the name of the province is Pampanga, Pampange, the GA, Pampanga. Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of craftsmen there, and it's a cottage industry. They do acoustic guitars.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you're doing acoustic guitars. Why don't you do electric guitars? Well, this is what my father taught us. They're not open to anything except acoustic guitars. So right. I said, and then China came in, and China was killing them, you know?
Yeah.
My God. So they came to me and said, RJ, can you help us? And it got written up in the newspapers here on the front page. But you have to start making electric guitars, I said. But we cannot. We don't know how to do it, you know? So I said, give me the... Okay, take your acoustic guitar, make it thinner, okay? Make it thinner, and I'll put an electric pickup on it. And make the neck nice, huh? Not more than 42 width. And the what do you call it? The nut must not be high, okay? Right. Make it low, okay? So I taught them, I advised them how to do it. And we're selling hundreds and hundreds every month of that. It's that one we sell for about $35. $35 electric guitar. The acoustic guitar is about $25.
Yeah. Wow.
So $35.
But what's the average price point? I'm curious. You know,
well, it's about are you talking about starter guitars or?
Well, no, I'm talking about, you know, like player grade guitars, you know, like a player, you know, like here, you know, a Fender Strat is, you know, $1,200, $1,500. A Les Paul is, you know, $2,000. I'm curious as to.
$100.
Wow.
That's what be for a Strat type.
Yeah.
Strat type is $100. But we don't make that here. We because we can't make that much. We're just concentrating on the we will be on the high end guitars. But we have manufacturers in China that we send a prototype to, and they try, and then from that they make it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I actually joined a couple of marketplace groups, and I've seen some of your guitars on the marketplace group, you know, really? that were for sale. Yeah. I actually saw a couple. That's what I told my friend. I said, I'm really kind of excited to get over there simply because there's guitars there that we don't have here. Right. Just like, yeah. I'm sure people would be excited to come here because, yeah, stuff here that you don't have there, but you know, it's like, I've seen some stuff and I'm like, wow, that looks really, really cool. I'd like to own one of those. And, you know, add it to the collection in that. But anyway,
so you have 70 guitars now.
Yeah, somewhere around that. I think it's 64 actually.
Like this one, for example. We had the factory in China that used to make the good Squires when they first started out. We know them.
Right. So
we had this deluxe, we call it gig line guitars. Can I have that? Yeah, Ube. We sell this in the stores. This is 200 US.
Wow.
And this one is a Strat type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they don't make for Fender anymore, because I think Fender moved on to Indonesia or somewhere, but Cork guitar or something, but I don't know exactly. But we really looked for them because they made the good Squires before.
Yeah. Yeah. I know sometimes people give the guitars that are made in like Korea and China and some of those places really bad raps, but I'm going to be honest, I've played some from those areas that are really amazing, you know, really great guitars.
Yeah. You know, for me, because before it was only the US and Japan that could make acceptable world-class guitars, I think. That's my take on it. And then Japan taught Taiwan, because labor in Japan got too high. And then Taiwan taught Korea. And then some Taiwanese went to China and set up long ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And Koreans set up also in China. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how it went. And then since Indonesia has all the wood, they're Indonesia also. And also India. I think they make guitars in India.
I'll be darned. Wow. Yeah, well, like I say, I think the Japanese, personally, I love all the guitars that I got that are Japanese.
Cool. They're so meticulous.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Really meticulous, yeah.
That was one of the ones I saw on one of those for sale sites. It was a Ritchie Blackmore Fender, but it was Japanese. You know,
I have a Fender that was made for the Ventures.
Yeah,
it's not rock. It's there. Japanese Fender made for the Ventures, made for Noki Edwards. I have it in my. It's in my room. Never mind. It's in my other guitar room.
Right.
but they make good guitars. They really make good guitars.
Yeah, they make great guitars. Well, you know what? I tell you, it's been an absolute pleasure, you know, RJ, chatting with you. And I hope when I get over there, I'm going to come to your club on a Friday.
Good.
And I'm going to bring you a surprise. I got something that I wanted to give you. Actually, I'm going to show it to you. Can I show it to you?
Sure.
All right. It's just like this. Actually identical to this.
Wow, that's beautiful.
This is my signature model guitar. It's made it's made by Burt Guitars in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Wow.
And that it's made out of roasted swamp ash. It's got hip shot. It's bare knuckles. You familiar with bare knuckle pickups?
No.
Great pickups.
Fantastic. Okay.
Yeah, bare knuckles.
I can't wait to try that.
Wilkinson.
Look at that. That's What do you have here in the nut? This
it's a Wilkinson roller nut.
A Wilkinson roller. Okay.
Yep. Got Spurzel tuners.
Wow. Oh yeah, I know that.
String through the body, of course. It's contoured. Okay. You know. Okay.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Has my logo on the back.
Okay.
And the cool thing is I don't know if you're familiar with American coins, but these are the Indian head and buffalo head.
Wow. Coin.
Yeah.
You really love guitars, huh?
Oh, if you only knew. That's why I was excited to talk to you, you know?
It's yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe you can when you're here, are you planning to settle here?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep. Yep.
So maybe you can let's continue our relationship here, and maybe you can also give us ideas on the guitars, you know, later on. Yeah.
That'd be great. But anyway, I had one of these made, so when I come over, I can I wanted to give it to you. So
thank you.
Have something to look forward to. This one's heavy. This one's about 8 pounds, but and it also has the
strap lock.
The strap locks.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah. So it's a nice guitar. Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate you talking to me, RJ. It was an absolute pleasure to meet you and speak with you and get to know you a little bit. And, you know, I want to thank you. I love the idea of your super vintage guitar. I can't wait to get over there and try one
and play one. You bet. And you know, let's really. When are you guys coming over here?
I'm coming August 28th.
Oh, that's very near. Okay.
Yeah, I've still got a bunch of shows, you know, performances and stuff in several different states over the next few. Yeah, because I played with Buddy Miles, I played with Delbert McClinton, Chrissy Hines from the Pretenders, Chaka Khan.
Yeah, you know, you have to keep on playing, you know, to keep it going,
Oh yeah, life. Well, it's my goal to be the David Hasselhoff of guitar in the Philippines.
Okay, very good.
You gotta have a goal, but I am looking forward to getting over there and playing and stuff and and meeting you in that. But
I'm just curious, what made you decide to settle in the Philippines?
Well, you know, actually, a couple of things. One is that I have a friend over there that's been there for almost 20 years that absolutely loves it and always talks about. You know,
American.
Yeah, he's American. Yeah, he was an executive for Bose Speakers, and he ended up there in that. But the other thing too, of course, is the economy. You know, the exchange of money, the cost of living. I mean, that's really
that's
really appealing. And then the other thing too is an opportunity to. I'm known here, you know, right, as a guitar player with my podcast and stuff. I'm known here, but I'm looking forward to going to some place I've never been and kind of just starting fresh, you know, playing and doing shows and putting a band together and all that. So
great. So anyway, there's one more thing. Mm-hmm. Why you should settle here.
Okay.
I lived in America for a long time. In America, you can delegate work. Here, you can delegate stress.
Well, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. You have all kinds of help here, you know?
Yeah.
Labor is really, really reasonable here. I remember when I was in the States, there was a gas shortage, and you had to line up in the pump, you know?
I remember just those days.
You wait an hour or something just to fill up. In the Philippines, I'll just send my driver. So I can delegate stress.
That's actually really smart. Well, you know, too, you know, I hate to say this, you know, but, you know, this country, there's some crazy things going on here.
I follow Fox News a lot.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
That's what I watch every day. All this, because I'm in media, and it's so interesting that now the media sides with one and the other side, and the other one sides with the other. Mm-hmm. It's not a balanced presentation anymore.
Right. Right.
Before you would catch them not saying the other side. Now, you won't catch them saying a balanced presentation.
Right. Yeah. There is
like a battle. You know, it's like a grand battle. Yeah. You know, within the country.
Oh, it's really gotten out of control with what you're talking about, with the issue at our southern border, with the issue of inflation, you know, and just all that stuff. People are so divided over transgenderism, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just crazy.
Yeah, you know? I've always loved America because it's an open society, and you know, and you really get heard. You know, it's fair. Mm-hmm. But that's all going away now. What's happening? Yeah. I can't imagine, you know, who else will we look up to?
Right. After,
you know, you're the beacon of freedom and fairness.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at what they're doing to Trump, you know, a 20-year-old rap or something. My God, what's happening?
Yeah.
You know, I can't, it's very sad for me.
Yeah. Well, it's sad for you know, so many people here. I mean, it's like people don't know what to think anymore. I mean, it's just really, really crazy. Crime is at a rampage. I mean, I just saw a video today of, you know, people robbing a pharmacy in Maryland. They just went in and just started just taking everything, and the security guy standing there. It's just gotten crazy. You know, it's just gotten really crazy. So, I mean, that's a...
Sometimes you tend to believe all these conspiracy theories already. Yeah. Why are they doing it, you know? Why are they allowing it?
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody understands why it is the way it is, except for, you know, my own personal opinion is, boy, if we could just treat our federal government like a Etch-a-Sketch, right? Where you just shake it and start drawing all over again.
Yeah. maybe this is the breaking point already, and then it will become better.
I hope so because it's a great country. It's a beautiful country. There's a lot of wonderful people here but it's just so insane right now. And so, you know, those are all part of the reasons why, you know, someplace. I mean, I did look at moving to Portugal. That was an option for me, but because of the friends that I have in Baguio City, I just decided.
Baguio. Yeah. Is that where it's called, Baguio?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's cold. It's cold there. It's like a Palo Alto weather. Yeah, I'm not kidding. It's in the mountains.
Well, I'm a big heavy set, you know, guy with a beard. So the cold weather is appealing to me.
Yeah. Well, let us know when you're here, Jimmy.
I will. Thank you so much. I'll email your son and let him know when this is going to air. And that, and I don't know if you've been on, if you've seen, you know, the show, but I've done around 600 interviews. I've interviewed all the top players in the world. I mean, everybody you can imagine, even some actors like, you know, Morgan Freeman and Steven Seagal and, you know, people like that, but mostly all guitar players, you know, a lot of the gear companies, they send me all their gear to do demo for my show. And I mean,
maybe you can give us tips on how to improve our online following.
My show,
trick to it, you know?
Yeah. My show's got almost 2 million listeners a month in 44 countries.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And how long did it take for you to build that up?
4 years.
That's all?
Yep.
Good. So maybe you can give us tips.
but part of it is you know, I've been in this industry here in the United States since, you know, the late 80s, and I know, you know, so many, you know, well-known musicians and guitar players and that. And by having that, you know, when you have Joe Walsh on your show, or when you have Tommy Shaw from Styx, or, you know, Joe Satriani and that, you know, if you can market yourself, if you can get it out there, well, it's pretty easy to drive traffic to what we do. So we have around 400,000 or 500,000 people a month on our website. So, wow. Yeah. So it's actually, it's done, I mean, extremely well. You know, I get invited to all the big guitar shows. I do two guitar shows here in the States in March. And so.
Okay. Yeah. Before you go, I just wanted to show you. Little did I realize that what I did in 1964 would be re-released by an international company. By the Gwersin Record Company, international release, limited edition of vinyl, because this got written up in the Pokora, Hans Pokora book of must-have vinyls all over the world, you know.
Yeah, I saw that. That's really cool. So
it's here, and they gave me some copies. And I said, my God, how did they find me? How did you find me?
Well, it's usually word of mouth, or you stumble across it. If you're like me, yeah. It's like I get bombarded with so much stuff from PR companies and record labels and that I get inundated, you know, with it. And so that's really cool. Well, congratulations. Yeah.
You know what I realized when I started, because I didn't want to listen to this anymore, because the recording equipment at that time was not that great. But when that record company chose this, and so, I guess I did some good things here. So I started listening to it. Boy, we were experimenting with vitamin bottles as maracas.
Yeah,
it was like in the home studio. Well, I had the first Ampex multi-channel, you know, the three-channel Ampex. And right. I still have it. I'll show it to you when you get here. But it's not working anymore. It's the first multi-track.
Yeah.
Then I realized that I did some things there that were quite good, you know. And I had it when I was beginning to play guitar. So I guess then I started thinking, Santana, he did his best work when he didn't know too much about principles of guitar, about Solidian scale and Aeolian and all this. So, and then Elvis, the best records was when he started, mm-hmm. you know, the ventures. And then, so I guess it's really the soul that drives it. It's you, it's your personality. You can't play exactly the same guitar as the other guy. It's a unique personality. So I realized I already had some of it then. And am I a better guitar player now? I said, I don't know, because I did a pretty good job there. So it was the tone. So it just hit me, you know, it just hit me, because I didn't want to listen to it anymore. But I guess that's the key. Yeah? That when you're young and you're learning how to play guitar for the first time, you're really expressing your feelings. You're not confined to the rule. You use this scale and this chord and this one. Mm-hmm. So do you feel that way too? Or
I do, actually. I mean, I can't read music either. Yeah. You know, I don't know a note from a note, but one of the things that I've tried to personally focus on is, you know, being strong when it comes to melody.
Yeah.
You know, really understanding melody, because, you know, and it took me a while, like anybody else, I think, you know, to, you know, like I said earlier, learning to play for the song as opposed to, you know, play for yourself. You know, it's like you got a song and then you got a solo and then you got the song. No, it's like the solo is an expression. It's a part of the song. So, you know, that should be melodic and fitting. I mean, one of the best players in the world when it comes to doing that is Neil Sean of Journey. He has a way of making the solo be an extension of the song as opposed to just being a solo.
Yeah, right.
You can sing it the same way you can sing.
I know. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. It's got to be related somehow to the song. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so I think those are the things that are the most important for me. You know, I'm like you. I focus on tone. I focus on melody. I focus on timing. I focus the conversation that's going on when you're with musicians, whether it's on stage or in the studio. being very mindful of that, you know, and knowing when to speak, you know, and when not to speak, you know. I think those are really important aspects that'll, you know, that I think anybody that's teaching anybody how to play guitar or even, you know, other instruments, I mean, I think those are really, you know, foundational aspects that you have to have.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. What do I know?
Well, no, right away. Okay, Jimmy, let us know before you arrive, okay?
I sure will. Thank you. Yeah. I will. Thank you so much. It was great.
Thank you very much. Thank you for including me in your journey.
Oh, you bet. Oh, you bet. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Well, I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with RJ. Do yourself a favor. Follow him on social media and on his YouTube channel. You know, make sure that you're getting his music and that on Spotify or wherever you get your music from. It's definitely worth it. He's extremely talented. And I want to thank RJ so much for participating in this episode. And until next week, you know, let's see who's coming on next week. It's a surprise. See you next Wednesday, right here on Guitar Talk. Take care.